Our next presenter is Dr. Lynn C. Messer, who is a social and reproductive perinatal epidemiologist whose work focuses on developing environmental and neighborhood measures to address maternal and child health disparities. She earned her PhD from the Department of Epidemiology and her MPH from the Department of Health Behavior and Health Education at the University of North Carolina. She is currently an assistant professor in the School of Community Health, College of Urban and Public Affairs at Portland State University. Lynn.
Thank you very much to the organizers for inviting me, actually inviting Jyotsna, to make this presentation today. And I would like to acknowledge the co-authors on this work, the first author being Dr. Jyotsna Jagai, Kristen Rapazzo, and Danelle Lubdell from the US EPA and UNC. In terms of disclosures, I need to acknowledge that I am a contractor with the US EPA. I don't think that the US EPA is considered one of the commercial interests that might be of concern, but I am continuing some postdoc work with them, and I have been contracted to contribute to the research that I am presenting today. So we are going from sort of specific exposures to a really much more macro level talk. So bear with me for a moment. We know that exposures to harmful and benign factors occur simultaneously, and we call that, you know, environmental health. We also know that not all amenities or disamenities are randomly distributed, but in fact they tend to cluster in regions of, you know, sort of there can be high minority neighborhoods that often will have more adverse exposures located in them. High income neighborhoods may contain amenities that are more conducive to health promotion. And again, these are not randomly distributed across space. Furthermore, we know that good and poor health most likely results from multifactorial exposures. In the work we do, we often have to look at sort of one exposure or maybe a mixture of exposures and a health outcome, but we know that that's not how the real world actually occurs. Many of these exposures can be lumped, or in the literature are often lumped into specific domains. Domains might include air, water, land, built, and sociodemographic factors. The US EPA is working to construct an environmental quality index that will include variables from all five of the domains in an effort to approximate, roughly, the environment to which individuals are exposed. This very sort of busy slide shows you some of the data sources that are being used for each of these domains. You can see for air domain, there are two main data sources, both of which come from the EPA, the Air Quality System and the National Air Toxics Assessment. For the water domain, which is very complicated and Jyotsna's specialty, and you're going to wish she was here, there are multiple data sources, most of which do not represent the entire United States, but she has managed to tie them together in order to construct a water space for the entire U.S. To represent the land domain, you might be familiar with, you know, Agriculture Report or the National Priority List, which will include Superfund sites or, you know, brownfield sites. We also are using the National Geochemical Survey to get measures of contaminants in soil. And then the sociodemographic domain. As a social epidemiologist, this is something we think a lot about. U.S. Census data, crime report data. We're also including indicators from the built environment domain. So all of the data sources that we are using to construct the EQI are publicly available except for one, and that is the Dun & Bradstreet classification system. That's a proprietary system. It is not available free of charge, but we're using it to characterize the food environment, the physical activity environment, the recreation environment, and also the disamenities environment. You know, we're generating counts of pawn shops or alcohol outlets or those kinds of things. So these are the different data sources that we're using. And these are some of the sample variables that we're constructing from each of these data sets. Some of them should be very familiar, you know, like the particulate matter. Others perhaps are less familiar, the density of fast food restaurants, or the percent of all roadways that are highways versus secondary roads, and the density of fatal accidents. So from each of those five different domains, we're constructing many variables. And those variables are all being combined in the following manner. To construct the EQI, so I'm spending a lot of time on the exposure here because it's a new exposure and this is sort of a first pass. So to construct the EQI, we're using principal components analysis, imagining that some of these variables are differentially influential. Some of the variables might be more important in an index than others, and it's probably not a simple summation. So we're taking the approximately 100 error variables and using principal components analysis to construct an error index. And then we're taking the approximately 80 water variables and using principal components analysis to construct a water index. And you can see conceptually how we are doing that for each of the five domains. Then these five domain-specific indices are being combined in a second principal components analysis to produce the environmental quality index. So what I'll be presenting shortly are domain-specific findings with the Association for Infant Mortality, as well as the overall EQI. For those who might not be familiar with principal components analysis, it's a data reduction approach that can be used to empirically summarize, not conceptually summarize, because we've already sort of conceptualized how we think these fit together, but principal components analysis will empirically summarize these data into one single component. You can actually create as many components as you want, but we're just picking the first principal component, which is the one that accounts for the largest total variability. So in this example, the beta represents the loading for variable I, and X is the value of variable for that variable I in county J. The analyses are being conducted at the county level, which is something we can talk about in the discussion. Our outcome data for this analysis are the linked U.S. infant birth and death records for the year 2002. We've constructed the EQI for the years 2000 to 2005. We got 1 year of birth data smack in the middle. We use the county of residence at the time of death, and if missing, use the county of occurrence for linkage with EQI and the domain-specific indices, and we removed all accidental or violent deaths based on these ICD-10 codes. The statistical analysis, we assess the relationship between county-level EQI and domain-specific indices with infant mortality. To do this, we used fixed-slope, random-intercept, multi-level logistic models. The EQI was chopped into quartiles in an effort to not impose a functional form, you know, a linear relationship. County-level baseline risks were allowed to vary because the model intercepts were allowed to vary, and we were able to adjust these models for maternal age, education, marital status, and infant sex, and we stratified these analyses by race. Here is just a brief picture of the study population. Over 4 million births occurred in 2002. Of the 4 million births, there were in excess of 27,000 infant deaths. The death rate for black infants was over twice that for white and other race infants, which is something that we have come to sort of sadly expect. And I won't spend time on the maternal covariates, but you can see the distribution here. Allow me to orient you to the slide. There will be four or five that look very similar to this. First, I'm going to present the domain-specific findings. You can see that we have split the domain into quartile. On the far left-hand side, it's for the total population. And I'm showing you the odds ratio, the lower confidence limit, and the upper confidence limit. The middle column is for white and other, and then the far right-hand column is for black infants. And then if the numbers feel a little if the numbers are more than you necessarily want to take in, you can read the little summary bullet at the bottom. So what we see in this analysis is that there was not much of an association between infant mortality and the air domain. This says slight decrease in odds for black with increasing quartile. It's actually supposed to say there was a slight decrease in the odds for white infant mortality with increasing quartiles of this air domain. Next, I'll show these are the results for the water domain. And what we see is there seems to be a decrease in the odds of infant mortality as the quartiles for the water domain go up. The same thing is true for the land domain findings for both whites and blacks in the combined population. And for the built environment domain, we're seeing a slight decrease in odds of infant mortality as the quartiles of the land domain or as the value of the land domain increases. Sociodemographic, again, we see a very similar pattern. I'm feeling compelled to lurch into some of the discussion and limitation points, but I'll get to that in just a minute. I may have to flip back to the slide to discuss them, however. Overall, what we saw is that there was a trend for decreased infant mortality with increasing quartiles of the EQI overall, and this, of course, is being driven by the white births because they represented the majority of the births in the total this total record. So, conclusion. I'm going to start by saying it's a little bit challenging for everyone involved in the project at this point to make a lot of sense of what this is that we're seeing. I'll talk about more in the limitations, but this work is our first exploration of A, constructing the Environmental Quality Index, and B, looking at associations with health outcomes. So please understand that these results are very preliminary, and we are working really hard right now to figure out the meaning of what it is that we're seeing here. This Environmental Quality Index is the first attempt to combine data on five environmental domains to represent overall environmental quality, and environmental quality does appear to be differentially distributed across racial groups. I'm going to add another little bullet point here to say, environmental quality will rarely be an exposure in an environmental health analysis. When we began constructing the EQI, it was largely in an effort to help control for the overall environment that we know people are exposed to in these environmental health analyses. So there will be people who continue to be really interested in the effect of air pollution on maternal and child health outcomes, for instance, but maybe at the same time they're going to want to be able to adjust for the water or the sociodemographic conditions to which women who are exposed to high levels of air pollution might simultaneously be exposed. So when you are, you know, digesting the information that you have seen, be thinking about, this is probably not really an exposure per se, but really something that we're going to be able to use to think about the rest of the environment to which people are exposed as we conduct our environmental health research. Limitations for the construction of the EQI. There is some limited spatial coverage, particularly for the water domain. We chose data sets that had that were available at the county level and that were available for the time period, but there was the water in particular, there's some spatial issues. And we required the temporal coverage be that it occurred over the 2000 to 2005 time period. One of the other construction limitations is that these data are urban biased. There is a lot more data available for urban areas. I mean, we saw this with the air monitors. These data are available for urban areas. They're more regularly collected. They are more specific to geography in the urban areas. And then the rural areas are left to sort of, hopefully be somewhere in between. You know, we try to spatially interpolate what happens in rural areas. So there is some definite urban bias in these data. In terms of the EQI mortality analysis limitations, suffice it to say we saw unanticipated patterns of association between the EQI and infant mortality, potentially limited exposure ranges, and what we learned, what we have learned, and what we're doing for all future analyses is that we actually need to stratify our analyses by urban-rural status. And we have begun doing that because the patterns of association, the patterns of even variable loadings, you know, air pollution loads differently in urban areas than it does in rural areas. Sociodemographics, in urban areas, there is not a protective effect of sociodemographics because the meaning of urban or the meaning of, you know, percent poverty in downtown Baltimore is very different from the meaning of percent poverty in, you know, Flagstaff, Arizona, for instance. So what we have found is that we have to stratify our analyses by rural-urban status, and almost everything, not everything changes, but lots of things change when we do that. Further, county is obviously too coarse a designation for personal exposure. In terms of the strengths, we're really excited about our ability to, you know, sort of model the overall environmental exposure. We were able to successfully incorporate multiple variables representing multiple domains. And yes, the strength that I didn't show you was that there are urban-rural distinctions in variable loadings. The mortality analysis strengths include that we had large numbers of infants, so we were able to observe very small associations. And this work definitely brought insight for future explorations. So future directions include conducting sensitivity analyses, stratifying all analyses we do henceforth by rural-urban status. We're also working to construct indices at lower levels of geographic aggregation, developing regional indices, beep, and considering associations with other health outcomes. So please let me acknowledge the US EPA and the magnificent other contractors who helped work on this. And please, this presentation does not necessarily represent EPA policy, and anything that I've said does not represent or constitute an endorsement or recommendation for future use. And this is Josna, and she's having a baby in 2 weeks, and that's why I got to come here and talk to you today. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
So I never get this right. After I left the EPA, there was a little bit of a reorganization in our office. And so I used to be in Epi Biomarkers, which is part of the National Health Environmental Effects Research Laboratory, NHERL. It's not Epi Biomarkers anymore, so I don't actually know what it's called now. But I can tell you that if you Google US EPA EQI, there is a link to the site, and it's based in NHERL, which is in ORD, and Danelle Lovdell is the US EPA principal investigator for the project.
Any other questions? Yes.
So I will say I guess, a couple of things. First off, thank you very much. I appreciate that perspective a lot, and I think that that is an important perspective that is not often represented. So thank you. I know that the EPA has efforts ongoing right now where they are doing smaller community work, and I don't remember the name exactly of the initiative, but there are some very, you know, sort of small community studies that are occurring that may be including some of, you know, that kind of work. I guess my thought or my concern or my belief is that probably the way that work will happen is, you know, not any one specific team that, you know, necessarily tries to do every single piece, but it's the field that tries to combine the perspectives. So I think it's unlikely that, you know, the folks that I work with at the US EPA will necessarily be doing, you know, ground truthing of some of the stuff that we see, but I do believe that that ground truthing will occur, and I'm hoping, you know, that it's people sitting at APHA who will then say, you know, I've seen this and I've seen this, and now let's see if we can't tie it together and, you know, do some sensitivity analysis. I mean, we're definitely doing sensitivity analysis using more local data sets, coming from more local data sources, coming from, you know, specific communities, but in terms of actually, you know, conducting qualitative research, I don't think this particular team will be engaging in that, but I truly hope that others will.
Sorry, there's a hand up there first.
I saw a great presentation by CalEPA yesterday about their statewide zip level look at identifying EJ communities. How many of the variables that you guys used in the EQI model are they using in the CalEPA model? You know, how much overlap is there? Are there lessons to learn both ways?
Absolutely. So we're definitely in touch with these folks. The first pass at the EQI was at the county level, and so we really restricted ourselves to data that were available for all 3,141 counties in the U.S., and that really, so on the one hand, that's really useful because it can be U.S.-wide. On the other hand, it's completely not useful because the county is too coarse, and it, you know, there's a lot more high-quality data available from more specific data sources, but they're only really available for little municipalities. And that wasn't what the first effort was going to be. So we finished the first, you know, pass at this county level. We actually, you know, are funded for the next 5 years to construct some smaller, you know, some EQI at smaller units of aggregation. And we actually are going to be working pretty closely with these folks to, you know, compare data sources to, you know, hopefully not only cross-fertilize, but to, you know, share resources, you know, because Cal will focus on Cal, and so we'd be great. Please focus on Cal, and we'll see if we can do something similar in other municipalities or other areas.
And one last question.
Yeah.
I appreciate your work. Pretty challenging. Great.
Thank you.
And I had a question on your ratio of categories. You just called them
quartiles.
Like what?
Oh, yes. So for this first analysis, crude, I understand. But we combined the racial categories based on risk for infant mortality. And in the United States, there's white risk for adverse birth outcomes, which is low. And Hispanic risk tends more towards low risk compared with the Black non-Hispanic risk. So that's why we ended up categorizing that way, because, you know, the risk for Blacks is over twice. The risk of infant mortality among Black infants is over twice that for every other race. And so that's how the categorization came to be. A finer grade categorization would obviously be appropriate.
Thank you again.
Thank you.